Okay. So today is the 2nd of June, Tuesday. So this is our second Tuesday class after I came back from the cruise. Last week we had one. Then like I shared with some of you earlier on. Last night we had a very good session. We were celebrating Vesak. Okay, now Susan is here. We can rejoice with the offering. Sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa-du-sa- Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, you can pay respect, huh? Yeah. After you offer, you rejoice, then you pay respect to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, Pusen, and all of the great beings. So this way of doing puja, we develop a lot of wholesomeness and the spiritual faculties. So this is how you can cultivate faith, sadha, leading to the virya. Then when you do it mindfully, you develop sati or mindfulness. Then there is so much wholesomeness because of the joy, the understanding, and the rejoicing. So when you rejoice with the generosity and wholesomeness of all those who have actually partaken in this puja offering, there is so much joy through understanding. And these are all very meritorious. The 10 meritorious actions, rejoicing is one of them. Generosity is another one. So whatever you do, whether you offer flower, fruits, incense, clear water, even candlelight, and all the other food items and flowers, they are very meaningful offering that can bring to mind all the related Dhamma. That's why we will chant later on. We will chant the salutation to the Buddha. Then we take refuge. Then we renew our precepts. Then after that, we will chant the puja offering, Padipa puja and all those things. Then we understand the significance of all this offering. And through this understanding, we make proper aspiration to pave the way for you all to actually walk the path of Dhamma beautifully, so that all of you can develop all of the necessary requisite that can bring forth the causes and condition for enlightenment. And this is something that all Buddhists must do. If they understand the cultivation, if they understand what the Buddha has actually taught, so all these are meant to help out in your cultivation. So do not underestimate all this devotional practice, puja offering, puja ceremony. They are very, very important. They not only bring forth the faith, like I explained just now, it can also develop the causes and condition for you to walk the path of Dhamma very, very easily and beautifully. So with this, we will start our puja chanting. So learn to rejoice more and more. Okay, turn to page 4 of your chanting book. Those who don't have, you can collect the chanting book in front. Okay. So now we will start the vandana. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. ดุทิยัมปิบุตังสรณังกัจฉามิดุทิยัมปิดัมมังสรณังกัจฉามิดุทิยัมปิสังฆังสรณังกัจฉามิตติยัมปิบุตังสรณังกัจฉามิตติยัมปิดัมมังสรณังกัจฉามิตติยัมปิสังฆังสรณังกัจฉามิปาณาติปาตาเวรมณีสิกขาปะฏิสมาทิยามิอาทินาทานาเวรมณีสิกขาปะฏิสมาทิยามิกามิสุมิจฉาจาราเวรมณีสิกขาปะฏิสมาทิยามิมุสาวาทาเวรมณีสิกขาปะฏิสมาทิยามิสุราเมรยามัจจาปมาทฐานะเวรมณีสิกขาปะฏิสมาทิยามิNow together we will chant the puja offering, starting with Padipa puja, which is the offering of light. Ganna sarapaditena ditpena tamang dangsina tiloka dipang sambuddhang pujayami tamonudang ganda sambarayutenaDopenahang suganghina Pujaye pujaniyang tang Puja bhajana muttamang Vanna ganda gunopetang Etang kasuma santatin Pujayami munindasa Siri pada sarorohe Pujemi Buddhang Kasumena Nena Punnena Matena Chahotu Mokang Pupang Milayati Yatta Idang Me Kayo Tata Yati Vinasabawang Adivasetu NobantePaniyang parikapitang Anukampang upadaya Patigan hotu muttamang Okay, turn to page 18. We will invoke the understanding of this puja offering, and through this understanding we will make the aspiration. So after understanding the significance of offering of lightWe shall make the following aspiration. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness of ignorance therein. Then understanding the significance of offering of water, we shall make this aspiration.May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Understanding the significance of offering of incense, we shall make this aspiration. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense,which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Understanding the significance of offering of fruits, we shall make the following aspiration. May these offerings of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soonestpossible. Now, understanding the significance of offering of flower, we shall make this aspiration. May this constant offering of flower to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. Now we shall make the overall aspiration. By the power of these merits, born of this offering, may our spiritual faculties of sadha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers. Then sharing and transfer merits to all beings. Today I got an announcement. We had to Today you see on the whiteboard. I had a special request from Joyce. He want us to help the hubby, which is Clifford Lim, to actually speed up his recovery. He has some, I think, I also don't know how to describe. He got some sickness that need condition to help him recover faster. So instead of only sharing and transfer merits to all beings, we shall also include all this wholesomeness to arise the causes and condition for Joyce Harvey, Clifford Lim, to recover from whatever sickness that he is going through, so that he can regain back to good health, so that he can actually help out in whatever way that can allow Joyce to have more free time to join us for our Tuesday class and other Thursday and other Dhamma classes. Because these few days after the retreat from Cameron, she needs to spend more time with Clifford, because he's having some, not serious, but minor type of sickness that need her attention. Understand? So we hope by the power of this offering, wholesomeness, and together with whatever wholesomeness and goodness that we will do today for our Tuesday session, we dedicate this wholesomeness to Clifford Lim, and also invoke the power of this merits to arise the causes and conditions for him to recover to good health as soon as possible, so that Joyce can have more time to cultivate and develop the Dhamma understanding together. Join us again in our classes. So we will now chant the sharing and transfer merits to end our puja. Okay. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the conditions and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, so with this, we conclude our puja offering. So, as usual, I think we all have 15 minutes of meditation. It will be just nice, because now it's about before 8:40. So, I will off the light. Then you can have your 15 minutes of meditation. Then after that, we will invoke the invocation to the devas. Then we will start our Diamond Sutta lesson again. For those who already know how to meditate, you can start straight away, okay? Okay. For those who have enough, you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Eh? Then we will start our Buddha chanting. Eh? Turn to page 6. Eh? We will do the invocation to the devas. I will read to you the English translation. Invocations to the devas. In the universe, in the entirety, let the deities come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and relays Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. Samanta Chakavalesu Atragachantu Devata Saddhamang Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakkamokkalang Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Bandhata Dhamma savanan kalo ayang bandhata. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang bandhata. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Ittipeso bhagava arahang sammasambuddho. Vijja charana sampanno sugato lokavido anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati satta deva manusana buddho bhagavati. Svakato bhagavata dhammo sandittiko akaliko ehi pasiko opanayiko pachatang veditabbo vinohiti. Supatipanno bhagavato savakasango Ujjupatipanno bhagavato savakasango Nyayapatipanno bhagavato savakasango Samichi patipanno bhagavato savakasango Yatidam chattari purisa yukani Atta purisa pugala Esa bhagavato savakasango Ahuneyo, pahuneyo, dakeneyo, anjali karaneyo, anutarang punyang ketang lokasati. Tonight we shall chant the salutation to the four main objects of veneration to Tivita, Chitya, Vandana. Vandami cetiyang sabbam sabbatane supatititang saririke datu mahabohing buddha rupang sakalang sada. The meaning, I will read to you the English translation. This one. These are the four objects of veneration the Lord Buddha recommended. And these are very important objects of veneration, because it can give rise to faith. It can give rise to a lot of what they call good energy field. Then it can drive your spiritual faculties. Then also a lot of gratitude, especially towards the Bodhi tree. The Buddha spent 1 week actually expressing gratitude towards the Bodhi tree that he sat under before his enlightenment. Then all the other objects of veneration, they are very meaningful. So I will read to you the English translation so that you understand. The reason why we have to develop this understanding is because in many way places where you go and visit, especially our spiritual trip to Thailand, to China, to all over the world, these four objects of veneration are always there. And especially our next week, this coming weekend retreat at Sumeru, you will see them too. So we need to learn to chant. We need to learn to develop the understanding of their significance and importance. So the meaning of this Tivita Chetiya Vandana is as follows. Vandami Chetiya Sabbam. The meaning is, the Buddha said, I salute or pay respect to every Chetiya or shrine that stand in any place. So that one is Sabbatanesu Patititang. Then the second object of veneration after the Chetiya is the bodily relics of enlightened one of the Buddha. That's why it's called Saririka Datu Mahabohing. Mahabohing is the Bohi tree, the great Bohi tree. And Buddha Rupang Sakalan Sada, and all of the images of the Buddhas, means the Buddha statue. So that you can recall to mind the nine great virtue of Lord Buddha. Then as far as the relic is concerned, yes, this Samasa Buddha and all the great beings, their form and mind after the Parinibbana, they hold the pure wisdom energy, perfection energy of that form and mind, that segmented life that has become the great being or the Sammasambuddha at that time. Because after their enlightenment, immediately after they connect, this pure energy, they will remain in the form, the physical form. And the vibration, because of the number of years and the consciousness that it holds, that's why the relics after cremation, they are very, very powerful. And even before they die, it eliminates that type of energy. That's why when you are cultivating in front of all these great beings, especially when the Sammasambuddha is around, all the great bodhisattva, when they come to this world, when they take the human form, they come in the segmented form and mind. When they connect, their vibration are different. That's why when you listen to their Dhamma sharing, when you listen to their sharing of the Dhamma, their voice, their vibration and their energy, they are very, very potent and very powerful. And you have the faith and the spiritual faculty, you will draw them, you will receive them. That's why my teacher, she told me, all of the great beings, their nature are ever radiating for the cultivator of the way. Only the cultivators of the way can receive them. If you don't develop the spiritual faculty, the spiritual mind states, that's why the five spiritual faculty will allow you to receive spiritual teaching in a very beautiful way. So that's why whole of cultivation center on the five spiritual faculty. Without them, the hindrance take over. The mental hindrance, the opposite five are very powerful. But the moment the five spiritual faculty fall into place, you can draw, you can receive, and you can develop the understanding of the teaching. And you yourself can transform and progress, and you will connect to that nature too. then you become a blessing to all. So this is the meaning. Huh? So if you can try to develop the understanding of this four object of veneration chanting, then commit to memory so that you know how to recite them with understanding. So that everywhere you go, when you see the four objects of veneration, you develop the faith. You recall to mind all these beautiful objects of veneration. Then your faith becomes more and more developed, more and more strong, until it becomes unshakable. Then when you are in front of a chaitya, chaitya are stupa that enshrine the relics. So if you see chaitya, normally you will find relics there too. So that's why they are together. Then you see a Bodhi tree, you recall to mind how Lord Buddha became enlightened underneath the Bodhi tree. So the Buddha has a lot of gratitude towards the Bodhi tree that provided the shade and the condition for him to become enlightened. So likewise, when you cultivate, you can also express your gratitude towards everything, every condition that has supported you to develop this understanding. Then apart from the chaitya, the relics, the Bodhi tree, you can also pay respect to all of the Buddha Rupang, means the Buddha statue that you see in all places, because you can recall to mind all of the great virtue of Lord Buddha, the nine great virtue. Then you can recite within Ittipisu Bhagava Arahang Samma Sambuddho. Such indeed is the blessed one, the worthy one, and the full enlightened one. So he got this nine great virtue. Then there's a lot of joy when you come to understand all this. Then your faith becomes very strong. During my early years of cultivation, I spend a lot of time understanding all this. That's why when I recite, even when I recite Buddhang Saranang Gacchami, the understanding is there. To the Buddha, this nature go for refuge. That's why when you chant Buddhang Saranang Gacchami, your whole nature, your whole emotion go for refuge. Go for refuge means you really serious, because there is no other refuge apart from the Triple Gem. But this is where the teaching, the Four Noble Truths, the secret of life can be understood. Then to the Dhamma, you go for refuge. Then to the enlightened disciple of the Buddha, the Aryan Sangha. That's why all this, when you understand, you chant is very meaningful. Then when you chant salutation to the Buddha and all the great beings, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa, you must develop the understanding. And this will actually strengthen your faith. Then it will drive you, the virya. Then your spiritual faculty will fall into place. Then cultivation becomes very simple. Then when you know how to do all this wholesomeness very well, until it becomes a part of you, until this becomes your religious routine throughout the day, you are mindful of this religious routine. Before you sleep, when you wake up, then in between, wherever you got time, you silence your mind, you meditate, you reflect, you contemplate. Then you develop the three turning wisdom. Then you develop heedfulness to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. When you do this, you are heedful. You have wise attention. You don't attend to things that are unfit for attention, because all this that you do, the religious routine together with the puja, the contemplation, the reflection, the three turning of the Four Noble Truths, these are all wise attention that can develop wholesomeness, goodness, no negativity. And these are the Dhamma that you should attend to, as opposed to all the wrong thought, defiling thought, evil thought, thought that has all the evil roots, as opposed to all the heedless way of living life, where the hindrance, mental hindrance, are very strong. Such a mind will fall, such a mind will develop what they call karmic negativity. And such a mind has got no chance for spiritual development at all. That's why the Buddha said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless, whereas the heedless are as if dead. So if you are heedless spiritually, you are as if dead. There's no chance at all. So ever mindful, train yourself to be heedful. That is the most important. Yeah? Okay, now we can rejoice together. Huh? Then we end. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, now we can continue with our Diamond Sutta. Huh? So tonight, we will continue from where we stopped. Huh? I think we start at page 4. Isn't it? Huh? Yeah, page 4, huh? First paragraph, I remember. Huh? Such division of the one principle are mere expedient, which serves to accord with the various understanding of living beings. Just give me a minute. Huh? Now I suddenly remember I got a tray. Yeah. It's okay, don't worry. This one I must thank Padmasuri. He go and buy this tray which I use at the Cameron Highland retreat. It's very good. The height just nice. Otherwise too low, I cannot read when I take off my spec. So with this, it's very, very convenient. So we should thank her. Huh? Rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, turn to page 4. Huh? So I have read the first part. Since division of the one principle are mere expedients, which serves in to accord with the various understanding of living beings. So the expedient way are just like in meditation, all of your method, technique, they are only skillful ways to teach people who have different personality, to suit them, to train their mind. So here also, when they divide the one principle of the Diamond Sutta, they are mere expedient which serves to accord with the various understanding of living beings. Because different living beings who cultivate differently, and some are at different stages of cultivation. So in order to cater for them, there are these expedients way to actually share the Dhamma. So that's why they divide the one principle into many, many periods of teachings. Like during the Buddha's time, he started off with the Theravada teaching. Then later on, as people develop more understanding, he goes deeper. Then when he teach the non-human, the close disciple, he again teach different level of Dhamma. But his main concern that life was to expound the Four Noble Truths, to give the advice that all Sammasambuddha will give, because this is the most important teaching. The Four Noble Truths can bring forth the causes and conditions to become enlightened, even to become Aryans. The sainthood way, which is mainly the Theravada way, they are very useful, very important. But you have to start from there. It's only after you have actually developed the cultivation and at least realized the first stage of sainthood, sotapannaship. Not until then, the form and mind still is not safe from falling down to the woeful state or hell realm, and there is no chance to liberate from the cycle of birth and death, samsara. But the moment you hit the first stage of sainthood, even sotapannaship, path of fruition, you already confirm you want for maximum 7 life, you will become arahant. You will only come back to the sanctuary maximum 7 times. Then the moment you hit the second stage of sinhood, Sakadagami, they call it the once returner. You only return to the sanctuary one more time. Then when you hit Anagami, you don't come back. They call the Anagami, the third stage of sinhood, the non-returner. They will take birth in the pure abode, in the Brahma realm. That is the form realm. Very near the formless realm. They won't come back to the sensual realm. That's why they are called non-returner. So, sainthood way, even though Mahayana do not really fancy such cultivation, because for them, Mahayana way is the Bodhisattva way. They prefer the Bodhisattva way because it is a lot more immense and meaningful, and they can save more living beings, and they can be a blessing to all for a long, long time. Whereas the sainthood way, you want to finish it off fast, it can be pretty fast. But to the Mahayana, is self-enlightenment. So it depends on how you look at it, because you cannot say that they are selfish, because the arahant is no more delusion. They don't have any more selfishness. So it's your choice how you want to develop them. But no matter what way you take, you have to go through the sainthood way before you penetrate further. So that's the reason why Sakyamuni, when he came, he teach the Four Noble Truths. And the emphasis is to get as many as possible across through the sainthood way. Then those who have the condition and the parami, they will know. They will continue with the Bodhisattva way. Then they will go the full Sammasambuddha way. Okay, we will continue. Divided, we have the Vajra Prajna Paramita Sutta. United, it is the Vajra Sutta. It could also be called the Vajra Paramita Sutta. There is no need for rigid interpretation. This one is very important. The Vajra Sutta itself speaks of no fixed method or technique. See? Because they never define the meditation as an art. If a person holds tightly to the views that one is one and two is two, then the explanation of the principle become lifeless, or I use the word rigid. Once you are rigid, you don't have the Dhamma, because Dhamma is in a continuous state of flux. Dhamma is within the moment. Moment to moment, life passes by. The Dhamma is ever, ever changing and moving. Causes and conditions, at any one time, they always flow and unceasingly, just like the water in the stream. It's never two moments the same, understand? Because it's continuously flowing. Similarly, your form and mind, unless you know how to seize the mind, it is continuously flowing. That's why the outflow of thought, outflow of consciousness, they continuously evolve and flow. Even your feeling, your consciousness, your activity of mind, your perception, everything that goes on within the form and mind, every moment of contact arises feeling. But every moment of contact is different. Every moment of feeling is different. Every moment of conditioning from what happened is different. Then every contact also simultaneously creates consciousness. And different people, different time, different condition, when consciousness arrives, you input different content into it depending on your wisdom, your understanding, and your cultivation. If you are heedless, your content are all defiling with the evil roots. You cannot have wholesome content of consciousness. And because of that, karmically they will fall. That's why you have to be heedful. The heedless eye as if dead is very clear. So all this is understanding. Okay, after that, we can continue. Vajra is durable, luminous, and able to cut. The substance of Vajra is durable, able to destroy what nothing else can, and yet is itself indestructible. So that is the beauty of Vajra. That's why they equate it as diamond. But diamond is one of the hardest elements around. The substance of Vajra fully control devious influences, including heavenly demons and outside way. This one is beautiful. The substance of Vajra. That's why this sutta is very powerful. Vajra Paramita Sutta. Vajra been a very, very unique term. The substance of Vajra, when you develop this type of understanding from this type of sutta, it has full control over deviant influence, means nothing devious can actually affect you or disturb you. You can never be swayed by any deviant or devious influence, including all the heavenly demons and outside way. You know what is outside way? Wai Tao. Those that are psychic ones. Wai Tao. Like in the human society, you got the underground one. The crime one. Pian mun. Not the true way. So, all this, when you cultivate Vajra, this diamond sutta is very unique. Maybe for the benefit of all of you, I will go through the sutta again. Because the first time when I introduced, I don't think many of you got the meaning. Now you turn to this notes. Diamond Sutta, a new translation that I have given out. You turn to chapter 1. So that at least you understand how this sutta come about. That's why a lot of the Theravada people, they cannot understand. But this Diamond Sutta actually was spoken by Sakyamuni Buddha when he was in India 2000 years ago. It was not from the heavens. According to the Diamond Sutta introduction, you look at chapter 1, page 3, chapter 1. Normally the translation is, "Thus have I heard," isn't it? But this Englishman, what is his name already? His name is also quite unique. Alex Johnson. He signed as Namaste. Namaste. Respect to your nature. Namaste. This is a Hindu word. Those who do yoga, they like to pay respect. Namaste. Its meaning is, I respect you because you also have that nature, the Buddha nature, the oneness nature. So this is greeting. Namaste. I pay respect to your nature. That's why the Mahayana got this saying, if you are a real cultivator of the way, you will never, never offend any living being, not only human being. You know why or not? What is the reason? Why do you have that how do you have the understanding that you will never offend any living being? Yes, very good. Because they put it in a very nice way. Every living being is a potential Sammasambuddha. Means you are offending a future Sammasambuddha. As serious as that. Offending 未来佛, 得罪未来佛. You are offending a future Sammasambuddha. So when you realize, wow, that is the offense you are committing. So you dare to offend any living being. You will never do that. Understand or not? Why do you want to do that? Because of delusion, because of the ego. You want to be right, then you got negativity, you got selfishness. That's why you want to offend them. You want to do certain things based on your craving, your desire, your delusion. So this one is a very important understanding. Okay, now I read. Then you understand why I say this sutta was spoken by the Buddha, not in the heavens, but in Sarvati itself. Chapter 1 actually confirmed that. So instead of using this is, thus have I heard, this author, Alex Johnson, he liked to use this word in simple English. This is what I heard, he said. Actually, thus have I heard, it got better meaning. Thus, suchness. But never mind, we follow his translation. He said, at one time, the Buddha was staying in the Jetavana Grove near the city of Sarvati. With him, there were a community of 1,250 venerable monks and devoted disciples. Actually, these are not only venerable monks. These are all arahants. They are all arahants. 1,250. And devoted disciples. So this devoted disciple can be lay people. They can also be arahant. So a lot of people don't understand. Then the sutta say, one day before dawn, the Buddha clothed himself and along with his disciple took up his alms bowl and entered the city of Sarvati to beg. Not beg, the word is wrong. To go for alms round. The Buddha never beg. So to go for alms round for food, door to door, as was his custom at that time. After he had returned and eaten, he put away his alms bowl and cloth, bathed his feet, and then sat with his leg crossed and body upright upon the seat arranged for him. He began mindfully fixing his attention in front of himself. While many monks approached the Buddha and showed great reverence, seated themselves around him. That's why he just silent on it. But actually, he has a lot of mindfulness. He already surveyed the surrounding and the world. That's why the Buddha knew a lot of things. Then, whether there is causes and conditions for Dhamma to flow or Dhamma session to arise, he will know. Then, whether there are beings that are ready who can become enlightened, if they hear from him, he will know. That's why sometimes he will purposely go and visit that place to create a condition for that person to meet up with him. There are many incidents in the sutta. Then sometimes for no reason, he will just go to certain house for pindapat. There was one occasion, I cannot remember clearly. I think it was a very wealthy couple. And this couple got a very good way of offering whatever, very fine food or rice or whatever, before they eat. They will make offering first. Then I think that day the Buddha knew that the two are destined to become enlightened, the couple, the husband and the wife. They straight away become anagami, third stage of sainthood. The Buddha passed by, then stopped. Then actually, The husband was about to make offering. So he remembered that there were all this food, but the wife at that time couldn't understand. This was very good rice or food, I think. So the wife thought, why should you offer? We eat first. But the husband has such principle and understanding that he will never do that. That's why he asked. Then finally the wife got no choice but to tell the husband yes. So he took and he offered. And when he offered, the Buddha smiled. Then there were conditions, I think. Then I think he greeted the Buddha. Then the Buddha asked him, do you have any question or anything that you want to understand? Something of that nature. Then he asked a question. The moment the Buddha answered, he became a sota. He became an anagami straight away. Because they already ready. Then there was so much joy, that he no need to eat, that day. He offered the whole thing. Then the wife, very surprised, you offer everything, then what about me? So the husband came back. He was full of joy. Then he explained what he understood to the wife. The wife also became anagami. So easy. So now I explain to you the Diamond Sutta. So you also become great beings. So at that time, because the condition is different, like I said, the Samasambuddha, the nature is there, is very different, and then they have the parami. And the Buddha knew the timing and all those things is right, appropriate. That's why he is a Samasambuddha. So this sutta say he's silent. Then I read on, you will understand what happened. After a time, the most venerable monk named Subhati, this is another close disciple of the Buddha, the top 10 disciple of the Buddha, who was sitting in the congregation, rose from his seat. You listen attentively to this one. This is the tradition at the time. He uncovered his right shoulder. Yes, their robe normally cover, but out of respect, they got to expose the right shoulder. Then place his right knee on the ground, and as he joined his palm together, he respectfully bowed. Then he addressed the Samasambuddha. That's what they do at that time. Even the Brahma Sahampati, when he came down, he did the same. Yeah, that was the tradition. Then he addressed Sakyamuni Buddha. He said, most honored one, or the world honored one, it is truly majestic how much knowledge and wisdom your monks and disciples has been given through your most inspired teachings. It is remarkable that you look after their welfare so selflessly and so completely. That's why they have a lot of gratitude towards the Buddha, because they knew the Buddha sacrificed selflessly to benefit all of his disciples and the monks that follow him and took refuge under him. So they were very inspired by his teaching. Then because of his selflessness, the welfare that he has given them, and he has done it so completely, they had this gratitude and they were inspired. That's why he requested the Buddha to share this. He said, most honored one, or the world honored one, I have a question to ask you. If son and daughters of good families wanted to develop the highest, most fulfilled and awakened mind, if they wish to attain the highest perfect wisdom, what should they do to help quiet their drifting mind? Now, what is this drifting mind? The mundane mind is correct, but the mind that is restless, understand not? With the mental hindrance of restlessness, that's why it's drifting, heedless, not heedful, understand not? So this is a very good question. To help quiet down, not to make it silent yet, to help quiet their drifting mind and help subdue their craving thought. Ah, this is the most powerful and most important. Subdue their craving thought means develop the wisdom so that this craving thought will not proliferate, will not arise again. The Buddha then replied, "So it is as you said, Subhati. Monks and disciples have been favored with the highest favor by the Buddha. The monks and disciples have been instructed with the highest instruction by the Buddha. The Buddha is constantly mindful of the welfare of their followers, of his followers." Then he said, "Listen carefully with your full attention," means with your full awareness, attentiveness, "and I will speak to your question, or I will answer your question." Then the Buddha said, "If sons and daughters of good families wants to develop the highest, most fulfilled and awakened mind, if they wish to attain the highest perfect wisdom and quiet their drifting mind while subducing their craving thought, then they should follow what I am about to say to you. Those who follow what I am about to say here will be able to subdue their discriminative thought." See, the word is discriminative. Yeah? Duality. Yeah? When you discriminate, means you got like and dislike, right and wrong, pleasant and unpleasant. These are the duality. So you have to subdue their discriminative thought and craving desires. Because the question asks was only craving thought, huh? But the discriminative craving thoughts are more important. "It is possible to attain perfect tranquility and clarity of mind by absorbing and dwelling on the teaching I am about to give you." See, you have to develop the faith, yeah, to dwell on and be absorbed with his teaching. What is his teaching? The essence of his teaching is what? Yeah? What is the essence of the Buddha's teaching? Huh? Louder, louder. Ah, the Four Noble Truths. Ayo. Four Noble Truths and his three turning. That's why these are fit for attention, understand or not? These are right thought. Yoni so manasikara. When you attend to the Four Noble Truths and its three turning, that is the cultivation. You will develop the three type of corresponding wisdom. And these are the things that are fit for attention. When you attend to this, the unarisen defilement, asavak, will never arise. The arisen will also cease. Because these are dhamma that will help you develop wholesomeness and overcome all of those negative tendency and states. That's why it can subdue all these things. So this is what you must do. You must dwell on the teaching, means the Dhamma that he is about to share with you. Then you must develop the faith, yeah, and reflect and contemplate. Then he used the word absorb. Absorb and dwell, yeah, means commit yourself, devote yourself. So these are very important pointers. Then he said, not only you can quiet down your drifting mind, you can attain perfect tranquility and clarity. That is the mind you must develop, understand? If you want to insight in the phenomena, what is tranquility? What is tranquility? What is tranquility? To be very tranquil is what? Stillness, isn't it? So tranquility of mind is what? Stillness of mind, understand not? The silent mind. So this one is tranquility. That's why you must understand all these words, huh? Double L or single L. Tranquility of mind, huh? So tranquility means stillness or silent. When the night is very quiet, very still, very silent, you say it's very tranquil, isn't it? Yeah? So the Buddha said you must attain perfect. This word is very important. Perfect tranquility of mind. See? It's not enough to be tranquil. Understand? You must have perfect tranquility. That's why you must have a very stable mindfulness, silent mind. So stable until it becomes samadhi. So that at the moment of sense experience, it does not waver. It does not stir. Understand? It always remains collected. Yeah? And unwavering. So perfect tranquility is samadhi. That's why with this perfect tranquility, because it doesn't stir, it doesn't waver, there is clarity. That's why he used the word perfect tranquility and clarity. And this is what the meditative mind is. Without this, you can forget about enlightenment. And this one must not be a conditioned state, no. Must not be in concentration and energy field, no. This one must be in the normal state of mind. Daily mindfulness. Normal state of consciousness. Not a conditioned state in absorption or concentration or energy field. Or in jhana. Not that type of mind. This perfect tranquility is born of wisdom and understanding. Just aware, without thought. That's why you have to train the mind until you reach paucity. Paucity is the silent mind, the tranquil mind that has already had the stability. That doesn't need an object of meditation to anchor it. It's already in sati, understand? That's why the mind is already in sati. Whatever that arises, whether hearing, smell, taste, tactile, or thought consciousness, you are always mindful. Means in the moment of seeing, there is sati. Moment of hearing, there is sati. Where the mind is already in sati. That's why it's called paucity. But if your mind still need to be trained, need to be anchored to object of meditation, that is not a free mind. That mind still dwells in the sana, still anchor, still need support. This one is the mind that has no dwelling is already still and silent because it's connected to that nature. That one is nothing to do with the mundane mind, the thinking mind, the conditioned arising mind. The conditioned arising mind, they arise later. That's why the moment there is perception, there is knowing, the moment you become conscious and labor it, you are no longer with the true mind. The conditioned arising mind, the thinking mind, the mundane mind has arisen. But the moment it arises, if you are not drawn or what they call lost in thought, if you do not allow it to proliferate and become heedless, then it's still okay. Understand? You can be aware. Then there is a perception, no problem. After that, there is clarity. Then you understand. Then it moves back. Then it wants to think, it can think. It thinks with awareness, mindfulness. There is clarity there. It's not heedless, it's not lost in thought. And that is the most important. That's why it's always constantly aware within the awareness, understand what is going on. And there is clarity. The one that is aware is not the thinking mind. The one that is aware can be aware of all the aggregates of mind, the mental states that arise, the mental intention behind the content of consciousness. So all this, you need sati, mindfulness, to develop the understanding. So after I explain this, I will go on. Yeah? Then we go to chapter 3. Yeah? Then the Buddha addressed the assembly. The Buddha said, all living beings, whether born from eggs, from the womb, from moisture, or spontaneously born into this world, whether they have form or do not have form, whether they are aware or unaware, whether they are not aware or not unaware, all living beings will eventually be led by the Buddha to final Nibbana, the final ending of the cycle of birth and death, because this is their vow to liberate all beings. And when the unfathomable infinite numbers of living beings have all been liberated, you pay attention to the word bowl. The Buddha said, in truth, not even a single being has actually been liberated. You must cultivate until you have this type of understanding, even as a bodhisattva. This is Vajra Paramita Sutta. When you have this type of penetrative wisdom, then only your mind can attain perfect tranquility or stillness of mind. Then there is clarity. Then only you can go the bodhisattva way to become a Sammasambuddha. So can you understand? Very good, sadhu. Because this is the real cultivation. Then the Buddha asked, why Subhati? Because if a disciple still cling on to arbitrary, illusionary self or form or phenomena such as an ego, a personality, a self, a separate person, or a universal self. See, universal self is Atman, understand not? The ultimate self, the true self, that one all God. Existing eternally, then that person is not an authentic disciple of the Buddha. Means you don't understand his teaching. That's enough. That's why this ego is a delusion. Like the Atman, the ultimate self, the supreme self. Then some call it the true self, the me. The M-E, because they thought there is a being to be enlightened, to become the Sammasambuddha. There is none. So this one is a very powerful understanding. Then after that, there is all the various chapters. That's why this whole of the Diamond Sutta I read to you, actually there is no Dhamma, understand? There are teaching, but there is no Dhamma. You understand? Can you understand? Why? Actually, he don't tell you anything. You see, at least Heart Sutta explain to you the five aggregate of form and mind. Understand? There are some Dhamma there, understand? Then, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva went through and tell you, in true emptiness, there is no birth, no old age, no sickness, or no four noble truth, nothing. Nothing to be attained, nothing to be achieved. Everything. He explained everything. There's a lot of Dhamma there. But Kuan Yin Bodhisattva's Heart Sutta already very summarized. He only zero in the five aggregate of form and mind. He said, ultimately, when he illuminated the five aggregate of form and mind, he realized that they are all what? Empty of self. The five degrees of form and mind are empty. Then he awakened and he crossed over. Finish. No more story. See? All these are perfection of Wisdom Sutta. But Diamond Sutta didn't even tell you about five aggregate. Didn't even tell you about the four noble truth. There is no essential Dhamma. It only tell you how to cultivate. You must cultivate until you understand that there is no living being. That's it. But you make vow to liberate and save the limitless living beings. So then even after he has finished saving them all, is it? Yet in truth, he has not saved even a single living being. And that is the real penetrative wisdom and understanding. That's why a Sammasambuddha is a Sammasambuddha. That's why you must understand this form and mind is not real. He know you, he know me. That's why there is no one inside there. Understand? But this five degree of form and mind is subject to karma. Understand? That's why within the conditioned world, there are living beings. Understand? There are four noble truths. There are form and mind that can be connected to the enlightenment. But within the unconditioned, there is no such thing. That's why in true emptiness, the Heart Sutta says, there is none of all this. No birth, no old age, no sickness and death. Because no one born, no one die, no one sick, no one old. Then no Four Noble Truth. No attainment. No suffering. No cause of arising or suffering. No cessation. Then there is no Noble Eightfold Path. Because in true emptiness, there is no word. Understand not? You cannot describe, you cannot talk about. So all this don't exist. So that's why you must have wisdom from both sides. The unconditioned, ultimate truth. And within the conditioned world, the conditioned Dhamma, where all the right views that the Buddha teach under the Dhamma, the Four Noble Truths, right view with regards to law of karma, law of the mind, law of truth. And this one exists within the conditioned world. That's why when you want to come to this conditioned world, you need a karmically conditioned form of mind. Understand not? That's why this five degree of form of mind is your vehicle to come. But this is not you. Understand not? That's why you must penetrate this understanding. But this form of mind, the five degree, is the one that cultivate and develop the perfection. Understand not? That connect to all this. That's why when you understand, then you will come to know under ultimate truth, there is no being to be saved. But when you do the work, when you come as a five aggregate of form and mind, like this life, this segmented life, this five aggregate of form and mind, which you call Brother Teo, and this is the one that performs the function of this nature. This one need to understand that there is such thing as karma, understand? Even though it has the ultimate unconditioned wisdom and understanding. That's why you must have both. So that you can come. So that you can develop the third stage of or third phase of Dhamma. Remember, first stage is mundane seeing, Khan San, Si San. Then when you go beyond mundane seeing, you go to the direct seeing, then Khan San, Pu Si San, then everything like not real. But there is still duality, one-sided. Then you have to penetrate duality. Finally, you become normal again. Khan San, Yu Si San. Because when you understand, there is no duality, understand not? Why must you discriminate, say, hey, this is mountain. Then the other one with the penetrative seer, no, where got mountain? This is like created by your thought. Sankara. Why do you argue? That's why the one that has penetrated all this transcend duality, he can accept things as they are. Understand? To a mundane person who has not trained the mind, he will see like that. Khan San, Si San, yes, he is right. Understand? Right according to him. Then to a cultivator who has penetrated, Khan San, Pu Si San, yes, he is right. Right according to him. Understand? That's why when you have penetrated, finally, you will agree. Khan San, Yu Si San. We are ultimately, this is what the living beings see. Understand? But when you speak to an enlightened being, then you will know. Khan San, Pu Si San. That's why you become different. You transcend duality. You don't get entangled in duality. You don't argue. You accord and flow. Understand? This is the true Dhamma that can allow the form and mind to live in this world. That's why the lotus analogy here. The lotus came from the filthy pond, which is the world, the conditioned world. But it can stand above the filthy pond and develop the lotus. And it is not defiled by the filth. And that is what enlightenment is. That's why Mahayana like to use the symbol, the lotus. To symbolize enlightenment, going beyond the conditional, transcending all duality. So this is what Diamond Sutta is all about. So hopefully this introduction can actually help you to understand much better. So now clearer or not? Last time the introduction time, I think I mentioned it too, but I don't think many of you get it. Then this is a very good condition for you to actually go through it as a revision. Then I will go back to the Heart Sutta notes. Turn back to page 4. We will continue from there. Oh, today we only finished one short paragraph. Okay, now we are at the third paragraph. The light, which is the characteristic mark of Vajra, has the power to break up all darkness, yet protect itself from all destruction. Light dawns when darkness is destroyed. In protecting the faultless Dhamma, Vajra eradicates all that is divergent and perverted. So when you develop the correct cultivation, when you develop the right Vajra Prajna, means the real solid Prajna or wisdom, as explained in the Diamond Sutta, then it can help you overcome and destroy all darkness. That it can actually also eradicate all that is divergent and perverted. That's why it can protect the faultless Dhamma. That's why here is mentioned, yet protect itself from all destruction. Then in protecting the faultless Dhamma, Vajra eradicate all that is divergent and perverted. When deviant teaching persists in the world, when does this happen? Dhamma ending? Dhamma ending age, anasana. When the Dhamma about to end, a lot of this deviant teaching will persist in the world. That's why the Buddha said, when deviant teaching persists in the world, then darkness will flourish. What is darkness? Delusion, ignorance. When deviant teaching are seen for what they are, then the faultless proper Dhamma shine forth more brightly to abide far longer in the world. See? That's why there must be more and more of these great beings that has this Vajra Prajna teaching. Otherwise, it's not easy. Because the world can actually fall and go into the Dhamma ending age. Without Dhamma, the Dhamma ending age will prevail. That as light is the characteristic mark of Vajra, cutting is the function. Vajra can cut like the keen blade of a knife, cutting metal, carving jade, slicing through steel, as is slicing through the mind. That is the power of Vajra. Such sharpness pierce all obstruction and control all deviations. Nothing can defeat it. So, the early days, I think Master Xuanhua used to draw the sword, the sword fighting one, the long sword. He always called it the Vajra, means the wisdom sword that can cut through all things. But now I think he knows the definition of this word Vajra is not really that type of sword. It's like diamond, they're very solid, so he never draw the sword. But last time, during the early days, the Mahayana, they like to use this sword as an analogy, because in the what they call swordsmanship world, Wuling, when your swordsmanship skill are very good, so like you have this wisdom sword, you can cut through everything. So here he also mentioned it again. So this Vajra can be equated to something very sharp. But more important is, it's very hard. It's the hardest of all. The mind which is Vajra does not refer to a mind, to the mind within the breast. Understand? No? That heart is flesh and has very little use when compared to the Vajra mind. So here Vajra mind is the true mind. The true mind within. Not the heart, the pumping one. Huh? That one is the seat of consciousness. The seat. S-E-A-T. Yeah? Because I never realized you all got the meaning wrong. At least Engby let me know. All the while he thought it's S-E-E-D. Seat of consciousness. No, this one is where it resides. Understand? No? It's the seat. It resides there. Where from there, the heartbeat pump. Understand? No? The life force, it pump. That's why it's called a seat of consciousness. It sits there. That's why there's a source from where it comes. And to the source it returns. That's why cessation happened there. Because here is the gateway, the source. That's why it comes and it ceases. The mind of Vajra is also not the false thinking mind. Huh? See, now you start to understand. Huh? The false thinking mind or the mundane mind or the conditionalizing mind is not your true mind. The sixth mind consciousness. You know what is the sixth mind consciousness? Where mind is also an organ, understand? Not? So upon contact, that's why when you think, what happened? When you think, what happened? When you think, what happened? You make contact with the mind, isn't it? Correct or not? That's why avijja paccaya sankhara. Understand not? Sankhara is what? Mental activity. You think, understand not? So when you think, it make contact with the mind. Then when mind has contact, what happened? Thought consciousness come to be. Understand not? That's why avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnanam. And they cannot understand this. That's why they cannot explain the dependent origination. That's why they are stuck. They talk about the three period of time. They talk about past ignorant condition rebirth consciousness. They define sankhara as karmic volition. Asana. Karmic volition. Is it because of karma you are born into this world? So ignorant condition karmic volition is it? Your rebirth consciousness arise. So that third link, vinyanang, they call it the rebirth consciousness. Then he said, dependent on this rebirth consciousness, it condition namarupa, the five aggregate of form and mind. He said, this is the human being born already. And dependent on it, the sense bases are there. Then there is contact. They define like that. Well, that is the only way they can find it explainable, logical. Understand? Other way cannot. And this is the Hindu understanding. Understand? That's why I explained to you all in my Dependent Origination book, which I shared during the early years, 2005. I say, if it's just a type of dependent origination or dwelling occurring once over three lifetimes, the Buddha teach you for what? Got meaning or not? Huh? Over three lifetimes only happen one time. No? He teach you as a theory or what? No point in that. What he is more interested in is every moment, every instant, that dependent origination that is happening unceasingly within your form and mind, ceaselessly within your form and mind. And that is more important. That's why when I cultivate and when I meditate, I realize that dependent origination is not like that. That's why I dare to say it's not like that. Because I can explain what that dwelling is. That's why I have explained to you all very clearly inside the Heart Sutta note and also the dependent origination transcript that I earlier on wrote. Those who are new, if you don't have that transcript, you can ask from me. Yeah? I still have quite a number of copies. Anybody who don't have? I think I've given to Susan. Huh? Have I given to you, Sito? It's a yellow book. I think I've given to Michael Lu earlier on. you read that one. That one is very beautiful. And very few people understand. Okay. So at least now we finish this page. The mind of Vajra is also not the false thinking mind. The six mind consciousness. This one is the six sense door. The mind is also one of the organ. So upon contact, mind consciousness. This third link, vinyanang. This is the six consciousness. So the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind, each has a consciousness. So eye has seeing consciousness. But he put here eye consciousness, also can. But it's seeing consciousness. Then ear is hearing consciousness. Nose is smell consciousness. Tongue is taste consciousness. Body is tactile consciousness. And mind is thought consciousness. Common people whose awareness does not penetrate beyond the six mind consciousness. See? The normal heedless living being cannot penetrate beyond the six. You know why? Because this is your thought consciousness. You are always thinking, lost in thought. That's heedless. That's why they are limited by the six sense door. They are caught within the conditioned arising mind. That's why Liu Tao Lun Hui within the six rhyme. Because these are the one that make you heedless. If you cannot go beyond the six consciousness, you cannot develop sati awareness. You cannot touch the true mind. You cannot connect and you cannot cultivate. You cannot develop heedfulness. So this one is very important. The six mind consciousness consider the flesh heart to be their true mind. See, you deludedly think this human form is you. That is the first mistake. The second mistake is thinking that the false thinking mind, which are the other aggregates of mind, is also the true mind, as Ananda did in the Surangama Sutta. That's why this one is very beautiful. So all these are delusion. That's why the Buddha said the five aggregate of form and mind, they are not you. If you deludedly grasp and cling, suffering will arise. That's why the first noble truth final summary, the Buddha said, in short, it is through delusion that condition you to grasp and cling onto this five aggregate of form and mind that I call dukkha. That is what dukkha is. That is what suffering is. The moment you grasp and cling to any of these five aggregate of form and mind, the first aspect and the second aspect, suffering will be the result. That's why in Hokkien they say you kena kao kao. You will get yourself entangled. Seriously. Okay, maybe we will stop here. You go back and read the one in italic. Maybe I just share with you, then you go back and read. The Buddha told Ananda, that is not your mind. It is the dust before you. The empty false mark of thought which dilute your true nature. Because of this, from beginningless time right up to your present life, you have taken a thief as your son, lost your original source, and thereby undergo the turning of the wheel, samsara. You know why the Buddha say that or not? You have taken a thief as your son. Try to explain. This one is very beautiful. Why did he say that? What is a thief? Steal from you, cheat you, delude you. In Hokkien, pian lu. Cheat you, deceive you. Who do that to you? Your wrong thought. Your deluded mind. All the while you thought, your thought is your friend. That's why you trust your thought. Whatever your thought tells you, you believe in it. Your thought say, hey, that guy cheat you, no? That guy is not your friend, no? You be careful, no? So you believe the thought. But every time you believe the thought, because this thought is, the source of it is from where? Delusion. When it's deluded, it has ego It has selfishness. It has jealousy. It has envy. Yeah? It has a lot of emotional negativity and fear. This is how you act. You act with that type of defiling thought, deluded thought, wrong thought. And you still think it's a friend. No? Then one day you saw how all this wrong thought condition you into fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, misery, depression. Then you wake up and realize, this is not my friend. Actually, they are deluded thinking. And they deceive you. They steal from you. They steal your spiritual wealth. They give you wrong understanding, wrong view. They make you selfish, greedy, emotionally full of envy and jealousy, hatred. And make you fearful, project your thought and do all those funny things to you and make you miserable. This is what a thief will do to you. Understand? Steal your property, harm you, kill you, rape, and do all those things. And this is what thief will do. Understand? So you have been taking the thought you think is your good friend, but actually is a thief. So that's why the Buddha put here in a very nice way, since the beginningless, this word is very important, from beginningless time right up to your present life, Hito Ananda, you have taken a thief as your son. You think your good friend, your son. Lost your original source, means your true mind, your true nature, and thereby undergoing the turning of the wheel, means samsara. You become what? Traveler in space and time. So the Surangama Sutta is very good in that. Yeah? Consciousness created the world and the continent. Then the knower become the living being. Who is the knower? The condition arising mind, karmically conditional, the form and mind, the five hierarchy of form. This one become the living being. And you grasp onto this thinking that is you. That's why this one become the traveler in space and time. You travel in samsara for eternity. And you deludedly grasp and cling onto this fellow thinking that is you. That's why you suffer, you become miserable. Every time you come, you go through all of the duality and misery of life. You experience the Four Noble Truths without knowing that they are the Four Noble Truths. That's why suffering is very real. Suffering is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. If you do not have wisdom, you will be afflicted. And the Noble Truth will be very, very real. That's why suffering can be very real. But when you have the wisdom, when you understand them clearly, then you will come to the beautiful realization, like what the Buddha realized. Suffering need not be. When there is wisdom and understanding, enlightenment in the here and the now, Nibbana can be realized. And the form and mind can liberate and free. Then life becomes beautiful. Everything becomes beautiful, eternal. No more duality. No more problem. If you cultivate and still become one-sided, you still got trapped in duality. Like just now we share the dinner. I think last weekend at Sumeru, one of the Dhamma friend's son, I think, he came and talked to me after our sharing. He said, "Oh, Brother Teo," he said, "this suffering is really, really suffering, is it? Because he has reflected, contemplated, and he saw suffering everywhere." He said, "Everywhere is suffering, so much suffering, is it? Within himself, and he saw it in other people. The whole world is full of suffering." Then you know what he told me? Well, I asked him, "So?" He said, "Life like got no more meaning, is it?" Oh, I say, "That is not what the Buddha teach you." I say, "The Buddha never said life is suffering." No. The Buddha said there is a noble truth that describes to you the irreality of life. When you confront them without understanding, you suffer. these reality are common, universal problem, common to all living beings. You are not the one alone suffering. Each and every living being, they have to confront them as long as you live long enough. Like birth, old age, sickness and death, separation from loved ones, and price, possession, property, wealth. And to be with people whom you don't like, when you cannot get what you want, when things don't go your way, when your expectations are not met. Then in short, the Buddha said, if you deludedly grasp onto this fire aggregate of form and mind, then only suffering arises. But if you have wisdom, you need not suffer. That is what the teaching is all about. Then the second noble truth, zero in and tell you very clearly the cause behind suffering. The cause behind suffering is your craving, born of delusion. When you know the cause and you know what is suffering, you somehow so gullible and allow yourself to become miserable, then nobody can help you. Where the Buddha's teaching is so beautiful. It doesn't mean that life is suffering, no meaning. He told me, suffering is everywhere. He said, like everything also no meaning. I say, your money you give to me lah, no meaning. Your house, your wealth, all give to me lah. Empty, not real, anichang, give to me lah. This is not the right understanding. The right understanding is, you must understand that condition arising phenomena, they are all impermanent. Not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can grasp onto and hold on to. But there is such thing as life, understand? There is such a thing as you can own them, but not forever, understand? Because they are not real, understand? They come and they go. But when the condition is there for you to own, then you own, understand? But when condition cease to be, you don't own anymore. You have to understand that. And then you will know how to make use of it. Like when there is condition for good food to come, I eat, understand? You don't be gullible, I spiritual, no, I cultivator, I cannot have craving, no, good food I cannot eat, no. Then well and good for you, pass to me, I eat. The Buddha's teaching is what? You must not have attachment to good food, understand? It doesn't say you cannot have good food. Because the Buddha during his time was served all of the best food by the king, by the noble ones, by all the wealthy people, those who make offering to him. That's why you have to understand the teaching. The teaching teaches you not to have craving, not to have attachment. Your loved one, you can love them with all your sincerity and your heart and provide for them. But you know that they are impermanent, condition arising, form and mind, no reality. So when condition cease to be, when it has to depart, it has to depart. Just accept that reality, because even you yourself, the form and mind, is not real, not you. That's why the Buddha said in the famous Dhammapada saying, is it, my son, my wealth, this only the fools, the foolish one lament, for that very body doesn't even belong to him. Wherein son, wherein wealth. So all these teachings are very clear. So when you understand the teaching, there is no such thing as, like Pavasuri mentioned, wow, when you understand, you become like very weird. That is because that phase you go through, you experience that. But you have to go beyond that. There is still a duality. Where he come to realize, things that people do, she won't do anymore. Understand? Because the truth is the direct opposite of what living beings do. Understand? But doesn't mean you cannot fit in, accord and flow, and live the normal life. Understand? You don't have to show your speciality, your wisdom. Hey, this one, wrong view. No, this one, hey, no you, hey, no me. No, not yourself, no. Why you do like that, like that? Oh, you must keep 8 precepts. No, you must cultivate number 8 Pa. Oh, your son haven't even gone through childhood and puberty, you want him to meditate or develop mindfulness. That is not the way. They are alive. Respect them for what they are. Then do your duty. Then you will not have all this problem. Because if you stop at duality, like all those who meditate, go to retreat, everything, they find that it's so peaceful, so calm, so good, that mind state like they enlightened. Then you know what happened? Come out to society, wow, cannot, crazy, this is a mad world, you see. Oh, everything is so messy, so complicated, so full of all this chaos and all those things. The traffic, the noise, wow. When I'm at the retreat, it's so peaceful, so still, so tranquil. Wow, Cameron Highlands, Sumeru, the mind state so beautiful. That how? Then you run away lah. Every time you got problem, you run away. You think of Sumeru, you think of Cameron Highlands. You don't understand what is meditation. You don't understand the purpose of retreat. It's to train your mind so that you can come out into society, into the daily life, to experience the world. Because this is what Noble Eightfold Path is all about, life. All of the eight path factors is about life. Starting with right view, leading to right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood and right effort, then right sati and samadhi. And they are all related to life. If you don't come out to life, you cannot cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. If you cannot cultivate Noble Eightfold Path in the midst of life, you cannot live life. That's why you cannot develop the type of wisdom. The Buddha is the Buddha because he can live in the world. He is at peace everywhere. If you only at peace in the retreat center or in the monastery, then that type of peace is still a conditioned peace. So, then like the hermit, they stay in the forest, stay in the cave. Very peaceful. Anybody also will become peaceful if you stay there very long. That's why the hermit are very peaceful. But if you come out into society, that is where life is. That is where the real test, the real challenge is. So you cannot cope with life. You cannot be heedful in the midst of life. You cannot be mindful in the midst of life. Then you are heedless. And the Buddha said very clearly, the heedless are as if dead, spiritually dead. So cultivation becomes very simple and very straightforward when you understand this. So ultimately is to train your mind to have a stable daily mindfulness, heedfulness, so that you can cultivate Noble Eightfold Path in the midst of life, especially the four foundations of mindfulness. And that is the real meditation, the real teaching. So no amount of formal meditation or retreat experience can equate to enlightenment if the Noble Eightfold Path and daily mindfulness cannot be developed and cultivated. So that is key to understanding. Huh? Okay? So any more question or not? Yeah? We got another 6 minutes. 5 to 6 minutes. So at least today we cover quite a bit. Although we only finished one page. But it's so much important teachings and Dhamma. Hui Rong, make sure it's recorded. Eating you lah, you are you liang ge zhe. So, mei shi, mei shi. Mei wen ti la. Meant to be, even not recorded, so never mind. Because meant to be. You all have heard, isn't it? You all have heard, isn't it? You all have heard, isn't it? So, enough lah, no need to record lah. So, anybody who don't understand can refer back to you all. I can give them your name. They all have heard you ask them. You don't worry. Whatever you listen with spiritual faculty attentively, they has gone in actually. Later on you will know. As you stabilize all this understanding, then you realize one by one they come out. Then you will recall to mind how the sharing come about. Like how I recall how my teacher teach me. Very beautiful. All the words they say, I no need to commit to memory. But that's how I understood and how I actually penetrate. Just simple words. And a lot of the words, almost 90% of them that I heard from them, is not in the scripture. Not in the scripture. You go and check. I have written them in the Heart Sutta note there. Especially Achayandra. Oh, his teaching is very different. He just tell me a few things. The highest meditation. He choose aware every action, every movement in the present moment. Just like that. That is the highest meditation. Then he say, always remember. Mind is mind. Body is body. Body never the mind. Mind never the body. We choose to take care mind. Mind most important. Just like that. Then I penetrate. I know how to meditate. Then I know already. When I sit, when the pain comes, body is just a body. Mind is mind. Mind never the body. Body never the mind. Means body sick, mind never sick. So, then I dare to relax and just aware and see it through. That's how the pain flash through. Then after that, no more problem from that day onward. Because I come to know what consciousness is. How the attachment, how the grasping, how the clinging actually created the pain. What they call the suffering in the mind. You know, when you grasp and cling, there's this aversion towards this sensation as well. You don't like that sensation. And the problem with meditators is they label it as what? Pain. What is pain? What is pain? Aversion, dislike, understand? That is the hindrance of mind, understand? Sensual desire, ill will. This is ill will, understand? So why must you labor? Then I realize when I silent and aware, it's just a phenomenon that no word. Then when I can accept that reality, because this form, when it's not relaxed, it will create constriction for flow of energy and all those things. That's how the tactile consciousness develops. That if I allow it to be, if I don't develop any wrong view and aversion towards it, if I don't say it's pain, then what happens? Then I realize, body is body, mind is mind. Then the awareness is just the awareness. Then as I relax into it, that energy, that chi flow. Then as it flows, then I realize the knowing element, the awareness of this tactile phenomena, the two are separate. There is a knowing mind that know the phenomena, the tactile phenomena within that form. Then this one is constantly in a state of flux. If I don't relax, it becomes more severe. If I relax and I know how to do what is to be done, if I know how to keep my composure, not to react to it, there is no mental hindrance. When there is no mental hindrance, what happens? Your mind can become peaceful, understand? Well, what are mental hindrances? It hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner calmness and inner awareness. That's why when I can relax into it, silent, accept the reality for what it is, the hindrance no more, then the tranquility, the stillness and the peace and the pity will come in, understand? There are no more hindrance. The spiritual faculty come in. Then it becomes peaceful, understand? Then when it is peaceful, the mind becomes very quiet, very still, very silent. That's how meditation can become very different when you have understanding. You don't go and label and note with delusion, pain, pain, pain. You already note pain, which is a hindrance of mind, and you expect to be peaceful. And you call that meditation, vipassana, some more. Oh, I don't understand. I wish you luck, you do that. That's not. Means you do without understanding. You believe what people tell you. Sometimes you become more gullible. I heard them telling that when there is a lot of thought, when you think a lot, you go and not thinking, 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 then you will go away. Or you go and try. I wish you luck. The more active you are in verbalization, the more thought come out. So meditation has to be done with understanding. Okay, 10:30. Any question so far? No question, So shall we rejoice, Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, I promised Joyce to do something for her husband, Clifford Lip, on the whiteboard. So let us help to radiate some form of metta and at the same time invoke the power of merits. So we rejoice with all the wholesomeness. We recall to mind all of the generosity, wholesomeness, goodness that we have developed, the meritorious section, over the 2.5 hour session of sharing. And we would like to dedicate all these merits, may this wholesomeness pave the way for causes and conditions for Joyce's husband, Clifford Lim, to recover from whatever sickness or problem that he is having, so that he can regain the good health soon as possible, so that he can help Joyce to have more time to attend our Dhamma session together with us as before. And at the same time, we'd like to dedicate these merits to all beings throughout the entire existence. May they all to benefit from this sharing and brings about the causes and conditions for them to have the condition to encounter the Buddha Dhamma, so that they too can walk the path of Dhamma to be beautiful beings, to be a blessing to all. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. And may this wholesomeness too pave the way for causes and conditions for you all to realize your good and noble wishes, so that you can fulfill your spiritual wish soon as possible, the noble wish soon as possible. Then we shall now share and transfer these merits with all beings. We will do the sharing of merits with the devas first. Akasatta cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu loka sasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits, and may they long protect the dispensation. Itta vata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired. May all devas rejoice and may contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transfer merits to the departed ones. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Let this merits accrue to our departed relatives and those who can receive them, and may they all to be well and happy always. Now we will invoke the blessing for the nation. Devo asatukalena sasa sampati hetu cha fito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season. May there be a rich and good harvest throughout. May the world be peaceful and prosperous always. May the government of the day, the king and the rulers be righteous. Now you make your aspiration. Imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya. By the grace of this marriage that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish but only the wise and the enlightened one until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha and all the worthy ones.